Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Launch Darkly. Here's today's moderator, Tom Tamman.
The U.S. Agency for International Development is updating its programs and how they're managed. The agency is also updating its supporting information technology systems, including its customer relations management system, so they're more reliable, predictable, and secure. I discussed this in detail with USAID's Chief Information Officer, Jason Gray. You are relatively new to USAID, although not new to the information technology management function in government and in industry, we should say. But tell us what initially you're finding at USAID in terms of modernization and software projects. What does the landscape look like so far?
Yeah, it looks great. Actually, when you're new coming into an organization, you do a full assessment to get a picture of that landscape. And I will say I've been very impressed. The technical expertise here is deep and wide, which is really refreshing and was really nice to see. The agency's culture and embrace of technology and modernization has made it also very refreshing. So I'm seeing things are looking pretty good. I know, much like a lot of other agencies, but the ability to transition during the pandemic to a fully remote workforce, I think, was evidenced by their prior planning for their modernization efforts to be remote. So I walked into a really good situation, which was pleasantly surprising.
And are there any modernizations going on now that you have suddenly find yourself, I guess, ultimately responsible for?
Yes. So there's several things that the agency has going on. Primarily, we're, much like many other federal agencies, focusing on the hybrid work environment and the workforce. So a lot of efforts going on to modernize our conference rooms to make sure that the experience that employees are having are the same, regardless of whether they're at home, whether they're in the office, or even on the road, because we want to make sure we're are providing fair and equitable services across all of our users. That is certainly one area. We're also working on an enterprise customer relationship management program and tool, which we just received some funding from the Technology Modernization Fund for. And that's going to be looking globally across all of our agency and our implementing partners. Zero trust, of course, is a critical component that all of government is working on. And we absolutely are deeply invested in that as well. The administrator also has a focus on burden reduction. So we're looking specifically on the types of burdens that we can reduce from a technology standpoint across the agency as well. So those are a few.
And just if you would define burden reduction, that sounds like something anyone would want.
Yeah. So in essence, it's really about cutting the red tape and improving processes and reducing redundancy that perhaps sometimes doesn't need to be there. That, just as an example, when you have a bunch of administrative processes where you could actually have just a few. So we're looking at, just to give some tangible examples, you know, coming in, looking at the frequency of meetings, just coming in and, you know, there's, because of the pandemic, there was certainly a lot of change to the frequency of meetings to make sure that you are engaging with your employees frequently and on a recurring basis. But now that, you know, some of the employees are coming back and we're in this hybrid environment, we're reevaluating that to reduce the number of meetings, which has been, you know, frees up time and allows people to focus on doing the work that needs to be done, as an example.
And if you would also review the cloud situation for USAID, USAID, you are, if I recall, largely in the cloud at this point, which means most of the CIO channel efforts really are software related. You're not looking to invest in elaborate server farms and storage arrays, correct?
That is absolutely correct. And USAID was, I believe, the first agency that actually transitioned fully to the cloud. So we are 100% cloud. And you're right, the focus is primarily on software versus the infrastructure. That doesn't mean that we're not looking at infrastructure modernization efforts that can happen, but they're primarily software focused, such as software-defined networking, as an example.
And one thing you share with the State Department is a large amount of overseas operations, people, and also contractors and grantees that you engage with for delivering assistance. It happens overseas in some places in fairly austere countries. And so there's the constant challenge of having access and cloud instances in those places, correct?
Yes, that is correct. And one of the things that I'm focusing a lot on is the partnership and collaboration with state. I've had numerous meetings with their new CIO, Kelly Fletcher, Dr. Fletcher, which has just been a very collaborative partnership while we're both focusing on how can we leverage each other to ensure we're delivering those services.
All right, let's get into the software question then, and especially the software provenance and software supply chain security. What's your strategy there? What are you trying to get at so that you can not only fulfill the executive order on cybersecurity, but also really know that your software is secure?
Yeah, so there's a lot that we do there, right? I mean, a lot of it has to do with how we develop and test. We are, I will say, a mixed environment, but much like many federal agencies, we depend heavily on vendors and contractors to develop for us, which makes sure that we need to have very strong, robust development and testing programs in place, which we do. We do, again, like many federal agencies, we have, you know, a develop environment, we have a test environment, and then we have, of course, production, and we, you know, go through the process to make sure that we're testing things appropriately. So that's primarily what we're focusing on. We also have we do role-based security so that if we have individuals who are, as an example, there's the back-end technical stuff, but there's also the front-end stuff and more like role-based security training to make sure that we are ensuring that our privileged users have the appropriate training and reminders, if you will, because security is a constant thing on my mind all the time. We also make sure that we're, you know, doing the appropriate level of testing, whether it's user acceptance testing, regression testing, 508 testing, just in general testing, software application testing. From a security standpoint, we have, of course, a very close relationship with CISA and invite them to test our environments. They also have a risk and vulnerability assessment program that they will come to agencies and target specific systems that we actually have them do as well, because that also, you know, provides kind of a third hand view. We also have a vulnerability disclosure program, our policy where we encourage that if people are finding things that they report it to us so that we can stay on top of it, because it's a heck of a landscape.
And maybe discuss in a little bit more detail the issue of when you test in production, because that implies that everybody is using the software. Do you also deploy, say, to a limited number of people? It's a production environment, but not fully across the agency or fully across the entire user group. So how does that work?
That's a great question. And just to clarify, we don't typically test in production. We will test in development, we'll test and test. And then once we've gone through the additional testing, such as integration testing, regression testing, user acceptance testing, performance testing, load balancing, stress testing, all of those types of testing, then, which again, we'll start small, and then we will do limited testing in the environment, typically from even in a production environment, very limited to make sure that we didn't miss anything, which I think is standard. And then when we're there, we'll typically phase it out. We don't do an all or nothing, because if inadvertently something happens, we want to be able to continue and make sure that service is not disrupted, because that's the most important thing, right? It's how do you provide continual services to your customers while making sure that it's secure, but any sort of disruption. So a lot of that testing is done in the testing environment prior to deployment.
So you could then, in a test mode, deploy the software to a limited number of users, almost, it's beyond beta, but not full production, but it's in a actual user environment as it would be live when you fully deploy it, that kind of middle ground. Is that good way to characterize it?
Yes, I would say, for example, there are applications that we will be wanting to push out to the enterprise when it's complete with the development testing and the testing environment, it's gone through all of the checks. Then depending on what the application is, we will want to test, maybe it's different users that are domestic, but then we have users that are remote. like really, really remote. As you mentioned, some of the environments that we operate in are, you know, are challenged from a technology standpoint. So we'll want to make sure that we're testing across the different mission space so that we can ensure that the level of operations and the ability for those employees and customers to use the services we provide meet their needs and ideally exceed their needs. So that type of testing will be done as well. So we're not just focusing on, does it work? So we will test it across the entire environment to make sure that we have tested all of our users, or at least the types of users and the situations. We're not going to catch everything, but I will say certainly in the 7+ months I've been here, the development testing have gone very, very well. And I haven't had any significant disruptions or issues as it relates to the way that we deploy software at all.
Jason Gray is Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Agency for International Development. We'll return with more of the interview after the short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Safely deliver and control software with Launch Darkly. Our FedRAMP authorized platform allows agencies to standardize fast, fearless software releases across programs. Accelerate digital transformation, improve site reliability, resolve cyber incidents in less time with less stress, and reduce risk when migrating to the cloud. Visit launchdarkly.com to see how Launch Darkly's feature management platform can impact software delivery at your agency. That's launchdarkly.com.
Welcome back to our interview with Jason Gray, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Agency for International Development. Our topic is software, software modernization, and how to add functionality regularly, but securely and reliably. Let's use the example of the ECRM system, and those are tend to be, you know, complicated systems with multiple functions. Do you have a way of, say, keeping the basic operation going, but if you want to deploy a new feature or some new functionality in a modular way, that you can try that out, keep the basic program running, but maybe pull back that feature if something turns up in testing or in that limited user rollout that, whoops, we didn't see that, or they don't really understand the function, the users, it doesn't work well with them, that you can pull it back and work on it some more before sending it out again?
Yes, absolutely. Now, that program is so new, we're not quite there yet, but there are other programs that we have for like our IT systems management program, which also does our help desk as an example, and our asset management. It is certainly built modularly so that we can develop different modules and test them independently of that, so that we want to make sure that it doesn't, you know, negatively impact the rest of operations, which is why it's important to have that agile modular approach so that we can build and scale, but also be mindful that if something needs to be pulled back, we're not, again, disrupting services. Because my goal is, of course, I want the services to always be available in delivering the services that our users need.
And when you develop, it might be in a development environment. It might even be in a local environment or one part of a cloud. Are there dynamics that somehow when it is deployed in production in a cloud, that there are effects that you might not have noticed in development? That is to say, when it's, say, compiled into runtime and put in a cloud.
I would agree with that. I would say that that sometimes happens because, I mean, it's this massive fabric. There's a lot of interdependent in systems that are working together. You can have situations, and I'll just speak generically because I have not had that happen here, but certainly in my career, I have seen where you deploy something and there's something else that was perhaps, because typically when you're going from a development and testing environment, they're not always like for like. And sometimes you may have a load balancer somewhere that has a configuration that may influence something. So yeah, but that's why you go through the testing process and you slowly phase it instead of doing kind of, as I mentioned earlier, the all or nothing, because I want to be able to recognize those things very quickly so that I can get in front of that and prevent disruption of services. So, and again, the team here has been phenomenal. They They're really skilled at doing this. They've been doing this for a while. And I would say that across government, that's been my experience. But yes, there are times where you will deploy something else that is going on, or something else that you have a requirement from an agency standpoint that you didn't realize there's going to be an impact. And then you work from there. Firewall rules, I think, is a really good example where you deploy something and everything works, and then you realize you have certain rules in place that perhaps in a certain environment, if you're testing internally, you didn't see because it's an internal test. Which again, that's why we phase it out there, so that we don't deploy something and then have to say, oh, but it's not quite ready, because we want to make sure when we deploy it, it's ready for use, ready for prime time, everyone can use it and deliver capability.
And you've got pretty broad experience in the federal government. Again, after working in industry, you are an engineer, but you've worked at Veterans Affairs, you've worked at the Department of the Navy, Department of Transportation, just looking at your resume here, and also at education, and now, you know, again at USAID. Do you sense the government in general is getting better at the agile way of rolling out functionality, instead of looking at an application as a giant monolith from the outside, looking at it as a collection of functions, features that you add to iteratively so that you avoid those problems, or when those dependencies or those fabric issues do arise, it's limited to that latest part of the software, and therefore the rollouts go much more efficiently and quickly than in the waterfall way?
Yes, I would say in my experience and from what I have seen, we continue to learn and grow and iterate and get better and better and better. Just across government, I have seen that. I don't want to say long gone are the ways of waterfall, because in some instances, I won't say where, but in another agency I used to work at, there were certain instances where waterfall needed to be followed because of the types of activities that were being done. But I will say that the agile approach has certainly been leveraged across every agency that I've been at. And I've seen a lot less disruption through the development and modernization of different tools and applications, which, of course, any disruption is too much. We want, all the nines that we can possibly have in terms of uptime. But I will say it has created a culture where that modular approach and agile approach to development, I have seen a lot less. Even when I review, which I do certainly every week, several times, like service level agreements, I have seen over time service level agreements continue to be refined and refined and refined, so that you have a much higher level of availability than you used to in the past. And again, I would attribute a lot of that to the agile approach to doing things versus waterfall.
And that must be a challenge too, I'm thinking, because if you have contractors doing the development and there is some kind of a contract for a system, the contracting and acquisition almost looks waterfall, and yet the technical development you're trying to do in an agile, scrum, iterative way. Does that cause conflict?
So I would say that I think contracts and acquisition have also certainly evolved in every agency that I've been at, whether there's augmented or supplemental policy that comes out. I just think about several of the agencies that I've been in where you have, of course, the FAR, but then you have a supplement specifically for focusing on putting, as an example, the cybersecurity requirements in the last few agencies that I've been at. I have seen that, again, to stay in front of and not just follow more of a waterfall approach to be more agile. So I have seen that as well. I also think, and I know that a lot of CIOs talk about this, and this is certainly one of the tenets of FITARA, is the CXO community and the collaboration and partnership there has been instrumental to any success that I have had in addition to my team. So I feel like the relationship between the CIO, the chief acquisition officer, the CFO, chief human capital officer, that is really key, because there's active dialogue and communication that's going on. So for example, just to use ECRM, the Enterprise Customer Relationship Management, I believe that acquisition from pulling the trigger to award was just shy of 6 months. It was phenomenal. I think certainly one of the fastest acquisitions that I've seen in my career, given the size, complexity, and scale of it. And I would attribute that again to the collaboration and partnership between all of the stakeholders associated with that acquisition and the acquisition process here. This is an amazing acquisition team at the agency as well. So yeah, it was really an amazing experience just to see how quick things can move when everyone's focused and united together.
And by the way, in the ECRM, in the USAID context, who are the customers and who are the relationships with in your context?
Yeah, so the customers, in my view, are a lot, right? Because you've got the agency is certainly a customer, because to me, from a customer relationship management standpoint, I want to know how are things working? And I want to understand, and again, this goes to back to your question about implementing partners. When we have, you know, thousands of different implementing partners across the globe, they are, in my view, more of the input to it. But then the agency itself is a customer, and that we are looking. So from a customer relationship management standpoint, they would be the customer, but how we would be using it, we would be looking across for trends to make sure that we're learning from it. And that process is done now. So this, I wouldn't say this is something new, but it's been a manual process. And this is going to be largely leveraging technology and a lot of the solutions that are out there today to be able to look at that trend with, in essence, a click of a button, instead of having to have a lot of different individuals manually going out. So yeah, the customers are going to be the implementing partners. They're going to be anyone who does business with USAID. It'll also be internally from an operations standpoint and critical stakeholders within the agency, because they're going to be consuming that data as well and looking for trends and ways that we can continue to improve the way that we're delivering services that we deliver, the way that we're managing services that we deliver, because again, continuous learning.
Jason Gray is Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Agency for International Development. To hear this interview in its entirety or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Tamman.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Launch Darkly on Federal News Network.
Safely deliver and control software with Launch Darkly. Our FedRAMP authorized platform allows agencies to standardize fast, fearless software releases across programs, accelerate digital transformation, improve site reliability, resolve cyber incidents in less time with less stress, and reduce risk when migrating to the cloud. Visit launchdarkly.com to see how Launch Darkly's feature management platform can impact software delivery at your agency. That's launchdarkly.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Richmond of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs with this message for veterans. Have you considered working at VA? VA gives veterans, particularly those with service-connected disabilities, hiring preference for all available positions. Service members just leaving the military are also invited to pursue a career at VA. Healthcare skills that you acquired in the military can be applied to VA as physicians, nurses, mental health providers, medics, hospital corpsmen, health service technicians, and pararescue specialists. Plus, VA has benefits and incentives designed for a veteran's success. Find a career that builds on your strengths and experience and allows you to continue serving your country. Go to vacareers.va.gov. That's vacareers.va.gov. I'm Mike Richmond.